haven't had a chance to look at it, so.
Call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for this lovely February 1st. To begin our short session, we have a little work to do to get started, and for that, I'll recognize the Vice Chair, Representative Hayden.
Chair Greenlick, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 1st, 2016.
Representative Hayden moved to adopt the committee rules dated 2-1-16. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
No.
No objection, huh? So moved.
Unless you have to have a two.
Can we have our vice chair to explain the committee rules, please?
The committee rule is you listen to Chair Greenlick.
I'm not going to do that. I rescind my vote.
Ask the committee members to introduce themselves, starting out with this time.
State Representative Jim Widener, House District 24, represent Yamhill in Washington County. This is my fourth term.
I'm John Lively, State Rep from House District 12, which is the City of Springfield.
Bill Kenemer, State Rep 39, South Clackamas County, and a tiny piece of Marion.
I'm Representative Rob Nose. I'm the Vice Chair for the committee. I am the representative for House District 42, which is southeast and northeast Portland. I'm in my first term.
I'm Chairman Springlick, House District 33, which is northwest Portland out into Washington County. And this is my seventh term. Wow. Madam Administrator? Hello.
Sandy Tilley, Circuit Committee staff.
I'm Representative Cedric Hayden, co-Vice Chair of Healthcare. And represent House District 7, which is most of Lane or parts of Lane and Douglas County.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Kennegeier, State Rep for House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, and I've been on this healthcare committee since 2012.
Hi, I'm Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend.
You missed our most important vote, Representative Bueller. We adopted the rules.
What's that?
I see you missed it. Voting, passing the rules.
Oh. He can explain the rules to me. Okay.
We did not read them word for word.
Thank you.
You may get that chance.
Just a word for our committee members. We have approximately 15 bills we'll hear in this in the first 4 days of the session. We only have 5 meetings to do all our business. So it's really important that we move expeditiously, as I'll say in the past. Ask whatever questions you absolutely need, but not one question more. That works well for you. We really are going to have to keep things moving to get to where we want to go. Today we'll hear several public hearings. We'll try and move again through them. We'll, depending on how many people we have to testify on each bill. We have to keep each bill to about 20 minutes. So we'll ask witnesses to stay to 2 to 3 minutes, depending on how many witnesses there are in a bill. I expect to attempt to move only one bill at most today. So it will be public hearings. I'm going to open a public hearing on.
I don't see Rep.
Buckley. Yeah, Buckley is here.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah. Which bill? Open a public hearing on House Bill 4030. Madam Administrator, what do we have while our two colleagues join us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4030 requires the Oregon Health Authority to amend the Medicaid state plan to implement programs to increase the medical assistant reimbursement paid to public providers of emergency medical services, specifies the requirements of the programs in the bill, declares an emergency effective on passage. It is my understanding that we have received a late amendment. I do believe it's on OLIS, and we should be receiving hard copies for the dais here shortly. Having said that, I do not have a fiscal or a revenue impact on
And Representative Doherty was going to join us?
Yes, she's right next door. She's carrying the gavel in her committee. She said she'd adopt the rules and be right over. I'll go try and get her. Representative Buckley is...
Representative Buckley, you're on.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. For the record, Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill. It was brought to my attention by the emergency providers in the state of Oregon that there is a possibility that we could access Medicaid match dollars, additional dollars, which would actually not cost the state general fund any additional dollars to pull down federal funding for ambulance transport of Medicaid patients. And I think, as the committee is probably well aware, our providers, the compensation under Medicaid currently in our state does not come close to paying the costs of providing the ambulance services in our state. So this seemed to be me to be a approach for our state to take to investigate the bill to give it some even additional allure. Is only 3 pages long, so if we end up having to read every word of it, it won't take very long on the House floor. It takes a few minutes to go through those 3 pages, but those are 3 important pages. They talk about the state working on the plan that to present to Medicaid and to join other states in pursuing the funding that actually comes closer to paying for the actual costs of the services provided. So I appreciate your time and consideration of the bill, and I'd be happy to let people who are more experienced in this area answer questions on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We also received an amendment requested by Representative Doherty. Are you?
I'm not familiar with the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll see if somebody else is. Are there any questions? Representative Buckley. The assessment this morning still all right?
Yeah, so it's going great now.
Good. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I lost my administrator. I don't know where we
are. She's looking for Representative Doherty.
Yeah, but we also have some other folks on the bill, right?
Yeah. 4030. Do you want to call up the fire chiefs?
Yeah. Let's
Chief Mike Duyek and Chief Tim Moore, I think.
That's right. Can we have a couple of fire chiefs join us?
Yeah, it looks like maybe Bob Livingston from the firefighters.
Let's leave one more seat for Representative Doherty when she comes across the next door. She's chairing the meeting next door and will be with us. Please make a strong case briefly.
Be quick. Thank you, Chair Greenlink, Vice Chair Noss and Hayden, and members of the committee for your time. When the representative gets in, we'll let her interrupt us and go through. But I'll get started on I'm doing a presentation on the bill that we're talking about, House Bill 4030 today, the Ground Emergency.
Sir, you got to state your name for the
record. Sorry. My name is Michael Dyke. I'm the fire chief at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. Today we're talking about House Bill 4030, Ground Emergency Medical Transport.
Oh, we can interrupt you right
now. And we're going to interrupt
you. Got one sentence in. That's not bad.
I never interrupt you. Okay, thank you very much for hearing this. For the record, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, my name is Margaret Doherty, and I represent House District 35, which is all of Tigard and Southwest Portland. And House Bill 4030, which is in front of you, will help public providers, fire departments, and districts offset some of the increasing cost of pre-hospital care. The current Medicaid reimbursement rate is far below the actual cost of delivering the care, forcing the burden onto our local taxpayers. Several states have already adopted similar state planned amendments, including Washington and California, and Oregon would like to be in the same as the other two states. Firefighters and fire chiefs are both supportive of this bill, and I encourage you to join me in helping get it passed. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I would be open for questions, but these gentlemen know the answers far better than I.
Well, but the question that I have for you is, we have an amendment with your name on it.
Yes. Yes. It is we have an amendment. We've got written copies here for you, hard copies. It is also now on OLIS. And what the amendments are is, when we went through and looked at the amendments, it appears to go through and deal with some of the concerns that people had. And I think Chief Dyke will be able to speak more for the amendments. But it does have my name on it. They've been filed, and you guys have copies of them.
It creates a work group, is that, instead of implementing
it? It does create a group that I'll talk about how that works. As far as if the legislation passes,
I'd like to hear that.
Oregon Health Authority assembles creates a work group and designs that state plan amendment.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Chair, thank you, honorable colleagues. I just wanted to speak to the bill that I'm a sponsor with the two good representatives that I've talked to. We've been briefed on this by my fire chief, who you're going to hear from, Chief Tim Moore from Redmond. And my age, I hope funds are adequate, and it's there to help.
Thank you. Any questions of our colleagues, or can we wait till we hear somebody who knows something?
One little question for him.
Yes.
I'm just trying to figure out, when I have a work group, I always have a fiscal on it, and it has to go to Ways and Means. This one doesn't have a Ways and Means referral.
Yes, it does.
What do you guys have over me?
It doesn't have a... Yeah. We haven't got the fiscal yet.
Yeah. Well, and part of it, if Representative Widener and committee, many times a task force has a fiscal with it because it has committee, some oversight and so on. Many times work groups are just people just come together. And so there's a lot of times there's not a fiscal involved with it. But if there is, it would go to Ways and Means as this the rest of this bill is.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chief Dyke, can I get back to us?
Sorry.
Thank you. So, the Oregon's emergency medical. Do you need me to reintroduce myself, or just go?
I guess you need to reintroduce yourself.
Okay, my name's Mike Dyke. I'm the fire chief at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, and I'm here to talk about House Bill 4030, Ground Emergency Medical Transport. Oregon Emergency Medical Services, the EMS system, ensures quality medical care and ambulance transport for every individual. This care consists of public sector EMS provider, which includes fire departments, fire districts, cities, counties, and special districts, and private sector ambulance companies. The demand for medical care has grown and continues to grow, and at this point, approximately 80% of the fire department, fire district calls that we respond to every day are 80% medical in nature. And at the same time, most departments, especially those in rural communities, struggle to maintain services in light of compromised budgets. The Oregon Health Authority reports that since Medicaid enrollment expansion in January 2014, approximately 436,000 Oregonians have gained coverage, which is a 71% increase since that time. Like all Oregonians, Medicaid patients rely on Oregon EMS system as they need emergency medical care and transport to a medical facility. This chart illustrates the medical care and transport of Medicaid patients transported by just three Oregon public EMS providers in 2014. Eugene Springfield that transports about 25% Medicaid patients, Hermiston, which is 21%, and Redmond, which is 12%. So you're wondering, why does this matter? The reimbursement rate for the care and transport of Medicaid patients is far below the cost of providing these services. This places an increasingly greater financial burden on public EMS providers and ultimately the taxpayers. For the sake of discussion, we averaged the actual transport cost of those three fire departments I talked about on the prior slide. If the public provider's cost for advanced life support emergency transport was on an average of $1,295, the state Medicaid ALS transport reimbursement rate is $421. Local taxpayers are covering the uncompensated cost of those transport services to the total of $874. Fortunately, GEMT can help fill that gap. GEMT draws funds from the federally backed Medicaid entitlement program, allowing public EMS providers the ability to collect on a percentage, and it varies state to state. In Oregon, it's 64% of their uncompensated costs for providing care to Medicaid patients. GEMT would assist the public EMS system to fill that gap in the cost of these services being shouldered by local fire departments and districts. The Medicaid programs such as this are not new. Oregon hospitals and healthcare facilities currently participate. There just are not any programs for EMS providers currently. preliminary benefit estimates for Oregon transport providers indicate up to $75 million in additional dollars per year, with the state of Oregon receiving at least $15 million of new revenue annually, with no increase in overall costs to the state or local levels. And the ability to receive funds from GEMT is not likely to change unless Congress makes changes to the entire Medicaid system. GEMT is limited to public providers, and in compliance with federal law and regulations, a provider in this definition means an entity owned or operated by a local government, a state agency, or a federally recognized Indian tribe that employs or contracts with individuals licensed by OHA under ORS Chapter 682 to provide emergency medical services. Now, with that said, California and Washington have passed the enabling legislation. California actually has a program up and running, and they're seeing public-private partnerships that are being allowed with certain stipulations. So it is available to all responders, or it doesn't change the rates currently received by all responders. GEMT legislation, House Bill 4030, is the first step in engaging the stakeholders. The legislation, like what is passed in California and Washington, is required for Oregon public EMS providers to be eligible for federal reimbursement. If House Bill 4030 is enacted, it would allow Oregon's EMS system to work with the state on the creation of a state plan amendment. The state plan amendment would assist public providers with participation in certified public expenditure programs, currently providing assistance to other Oregon public health programs, allow the creation of the ambulance provider cost report for CMS to determine reimbursement rates.
Captain, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay. It would create many things illustrated. Let me just briefly talk about the amendment. The amendment request has been submitted, and you heard Representative Doherty mention it this morning. It develops recommendations to align reimbursement for medical service with the intent and goals of an Oregon integrated and coordinated care delivery system. It does develop a proposal that would bring all the stakeholders together to help design that state plan amendment. It leverages the new federal financial participation for advancement in the healthcare system transformation, and it has a requirement to report back to the 2017 legislature. So to summarize, this piece of legislation will not only help small rural areas, but have the potential to realize additional revenues to deliver emergency medical response. It will position the fire service to continue to be an integral role in the way Oregonians find appropriate medical care services that they need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tim Moore. I'm the fire chief for Redmond Fire and Rescue. I'm here today as a representative for fire chiefs and fire departments that serve central and eastern Oregon. There's a uniqueness and added expense when providing EMS in rural eastern Oregon. We are faced with longer transport times. We are faced with fewer medical hospitals for patient delivery. And we are also faced with a growing population of Medicaid patients. In our organization, Redmond Fire and Rescue, we saw an increase in Medicare transports from 2014 to 2015 of 21%. Fire chiefs today are challenged with supporting an EMS and fire system with diminishing property taxes. GEMT legislation could provide significant non-property tax financial support for our organizations. GEMT provides a source of revenue that addresses these issues without asking the voters in our community for additional dollars. In 2014, Redmond Fire and Rescue transported 360 Medicaid patients. For the purpose of today's hearing, let's presume that GEMT funding has been implemented. Using today's Medicaid reimbursement rates, Redmond Fire and Rescue would only receive $421 in Medicaid ALS emergency reimbursement for a call for a $950 ALS emergency transport. This would result in a $529 uncompensated cost for our organization. GEMT funding could potentially allow us to apply Oregon's federal medical reimbursement rate of up to 64% for uncompensated cost, giving Redmond Fire and Rescue a possible $338 GEMT funding for that uncompensated cost. So let's do the math. With that $338 multiplied against our 2014 Medicaid transports, we would be looking at a possible reimbursement for our uncompensated cost of close to $122,000. While these estimates are a presumption today, they highlight why I'm asking you to pass this legislation. I'm excited to begin working with the state of Oregon to see exactly how much GEMT can benefit departments across the state. With the current Medicaid reimbursement rate structure, our organization, Redmond Fire and Rescue, is losing approximately $200,000 a year in revenue. Having to make that revenue up with property tax revenue that is dedicated for fire and non-EMS responses. In our organization, the GEMT dollars would be put back into our EMS system in our community. These dollars would be used to hire additional people and provide much needed capital dollars for EMS equipment. Thank you for your consideration and time today.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, go ahead. We have also some opposition coming in.
GEMT, does it also apply to rural ambulance districts?
If it's a fire district, yes.
Only if it's a fire district.
Any local government, if they're a public provider, meaning if they levy taxes.
But not to private providers?
Not directly. That's where public-private partnerships are being enacted in California, which is the only state currently that has a program that's been approved by CMS and is up and running.
It would be private providers working under contracts, under public contracts.
Yeah.
We'll hear a bit about that in the private sector in a moment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
We had one more. Did you call it Bob Livingston?
Oh, Bob Livingston. No, I'm sorry.
64% of it, up to 64, would come from the feds, but the state would still have to pay another 36.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And I would like to make 3 points. I think the previous speakers did a nice job to reflect on what appears to be a complicated issue, when in reality it's simply not that complicated, from the standpoint that what we're really asking for is an existing federal program. Some of the dollars that Oregon taxpayers put into the system will actually come back. So the 3 points that I would like to make is point one, we support the Dash One amendments that you all have copies of. The Dash One amendments really allow for the Oregon Health Authority, as well as the stakeholders, to establish a work group that gives us time so that we're not necessarily looking at this from the standpoint of the existing CCO program that's under contract with the federal government. This provides time to do an analysis to make sure that, one, we're doing two things. One, we address some of the issues that have been systemic issues for rural Oregon as it relates to fire and EMS and some of the problems that they've mentioned. The other issue in this process, and particularly as a 23-year veteran of the fire service and as well as a paramedic, this is an area that I'm excited about, is that this also provides for us to take a really holistic look at transformation in healthcare and how we deliver it here in Oregon. And one of the things that I'm excited about is that certainly while the existing system needs some assistance from a revenue stream that's certainly available from an existing federal program, what I'm excited about as well is through the transformation, there's going to be the capability that we can make a difference on how we deliver that care. And let me just give you one example, that if you're a firefighter paramedic that I see daily when I serve my community, it may be a good example would be the chronic diabetic patient that's hypoglycemic, that you go on that's not a new event patient. You go there, you stabilize them. Right now, a lot of places simply don't have the mechanisms to really address that person's health care needs. And so what happens is that person simply gets a transport to the emergency room, which is expensive and all that. And so what this bill will do is not only form a work group, but allow the EMS, which has for you know, since the days of Gage and DeSoto, been involved in healthcare, to also have us look at transformation. We've worked hard with the governor's office on looking at those issues, and we believe this bill is worthy with the Dash 1 amendments to go forward, because we simply are going to need the next year and a half in order to get the enabling language so that we can start realizing some revenues that are available to the Oregon Fire Service. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask you to hopefully all of you support the bill. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Would you call the next panel, please?
Sean Vand, Nan Heim, Dave Lapoff. Lapoff.
Perfect. Again, folks, try and be as concise as you can. Make sure you make your points.
Succinct.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Nose, Vice Chair Hayden, and members of the committee. My name is Nan Heim, and I represent the Oregon State Ambulance Association. With me is our president, Sean Baird, the owner of Woodburn Ambulance, and our association legislative chair, Dave Lapoff, who is with Mid-Columbia Fire, based in the Dalles. Our association represents both public and private and nonprofit organizations that provide 911 emergency service and transport throughout the state. So obviously this has been a very difficult issue for our association, and I will say that the vote on it was split, but the majority did vote to oppose the bill and to ask for more time to try to work this out so that it will apply to all providers of 911 emergency ambulance service and transport, and that would include volunteer agencies that serve much of rural Oregon. Privates, nonprofits, etc. And before, I want to take just 10 seconds to explain how ambulance service is provided in Oregon, because I think it puts it in context. Oregon law gives counties the responsibility of planning for ambulance service within their boundaries, for designating ambulance service areas, and for designating for each of those service areas one ambulance service provider and transport agency, just one per ambulance service agency, for ambulance service area. And it may be a public, like a fire department, it may be a private, it may be volunteer, it may be a nonprofit, like Mercy Flights in Jackson County, which is Air and Ground Ambulance, and one of our members. Our fire agencies, having heard about this program, are understandably eager to take advantage of it. At the same time, our other members feel very threatened by it. They feel their very survival is at stake with this issue. I'm going to have it, because to them it's going to create a system of haves and have-nots. And whether or not the have-nots can survive in that scenario is a question. And I'm going to turn it over to them. Oh, I did want to say one more thing. And I want to be careful about saying this, because, yes, the reimbursement is about $430. Thanks to our group working together, and thanks to the Ways and Means Human Services Subcommittee, that is the second highest Medicaid reimbursement for emergency ambulance service in the country, second only to Alaska. Is it adequate? Absolutely not. But I did want to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair and Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Sean Baird. I'm the co-owner of Woodburn Ambulance Service and president of the Oregon State Ambulance Association. My company has been the sole advanced life support 911 ambulance provider since it was begun in 1978, and we have worked tirelessly to serve our patients, many of whom are Medicaid. It's not a wealthy area that we serve, and it's largely rural, and we face many of the same challenges that you heard from the chief of Redmond Fire. During my career, I have also worked hard to bring up, along with what Nan mentioned, to bring up reimbursement for both Medicaid and Medicare as working with our association and working hand-in-hand with some of our fire representatives to get reimbursement where it is today. And we do believe that that struggle needs to continue. I am very concerned, though, about the inequity that the GEMT approach would take. And I know it has been brought up that public-private partnership is a way to address that. We think there are better ways to address it. The version of public-private partnership that I have been able to become aware of in California would require me to hand over the keys to my ambulance service area, let it be reassigned to a fire department, and then I could become a subcontractor to them at their will, and they may or may not continue that relationship. That really isn't partnership. So we think there are better ways. We've looked at recently a couple of options, but it would require some real digging into on the federal side as to see how it would actually work. We think that the way the intergovernmental transfer of funds would happen is something that could possibly open it up to all providers if the money flowed back through to the CCO for redistribution equitably amongst all the providers. We think that counties could potentially be the fiscal intermediary between who they select as a contractor, whether it be a fire department or a private. We think that there's the potential of looking at, as Chief Dyke mentioned, the provider tax that's done for hospitals is another model which could bring those enhanced revenue into the state. So I know we're short on time. I just wanted to impress upon the members of the committee that we think there are other options, but we really need some time to work that out and come back next session.
Quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the panel. Does the amendment that's being authored, are you supportive of the amendment and that approach?
I've only had a quick glance at it. It seems to address part of it. It addresses some of the health, how does it integrate in health transformation, but it does not address bringing all the providers in under the tent. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Members of the committee.
Can I interrupt one
more? Oh, absolutely.
Representative Escobar would like to read a letter into the record. Could we let him join us? Nan, would you excuse
us?
Yes,
speak into my chair.
Chair, I've got enough time here.
Oh, okay. Well, let's finish up. Okay, go ahead. Oh. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Dave Lapoff. I'm a division chief with Mid-Columbia Fire Rescue, located in the Dalles in Wasco County. excuse me, cold's coming on. And I didn't get it from you, Vice Chair, I'm sure of it. This has our organization torn apart. We have worked with our partners at the Oregon State Ambulance Association, who has done more to bring up reimbursement rates in the state than any other group. But we're also, my chief and I are also members of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. So we are, as you notice, there's a lot of my peers behind me that are not at this table. When I was president of the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, when I was on the board, it was a volunteer ambulance group in the state, and they chose to disband and move their membership into our membership. So since that time, the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association has, in essence, represented the volunteer ambulance squads, which for the most part are like 501c3 type organizations or community groups. So they are excluded from this. I am currently chairing a subcommittee for the Oregon Health Authority State EMS Committee to look at this specific issue of how to support these rural volunteer ambulances. So when Chief Moore talks about rural EMS providers, we need to talk about those people too. We're talking about people in Jordan Valley and Spray and Sprague River and Bonanza, South Lincoln, and specifically in our county, Southern Wasco and Maupin. They would be excluded from this reimbursement. As a large organization in our county, we do everything we can to support them, but funding is really what helps, and we can help them with funding. So we believe that there's a lot of benefits to this. Part of the reason that I'm sitting here with the Oregon State Ambulance Association is because myself and then four other fire districts believe in what they do, from Ashland, Douglas 2, Lebanon, Bend Fire. We all are members of the Oregon State Ambulance Association because we know the effectiveness they are in bringing up reimbursement rates. And every time they've done that, it hasn't been when they've come before this committee or another committee and said, we want to bring up rates just for our membership. It's bring up rates for everybody in Oregon that transports patients. And this is what drives us very difficultly at my organization, is that we are now asking to leave them behind when all these years they've brought us along. So that's primarily my point, sir. I think I might leave it at that, unless you have any questions for me.
You're basically asking that you take time to work this out between now and the 2017 session.
Yes, I think so.
Yes, Chair Greenlee, that is what we're asking.
Okay,
we think there
much.
Are several options worth exploring.
Appreciate you. Yes. Go for it.
Yeah, Chair Greenlee, thank you. If the work group is established, do you expect to have a seat, your organization to have a seat at that table? Have you been invited? Or has there been an olive branch? I mean, is there communication there?
I would have to read the amendment.
You mean under the First Amendment?
Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
Under the Dash 1 Amendment.
Vice Chair Hayden, I'd have to look at it to see. But as I understand it, the purpose of that is more to integrate with health care reform than it is to expand participation.
Right. I think we're concerned that the bill would still pass with a work group only addressing a narrow piece of the issue.
Thank you very much for
Thank
your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Escobedo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Escobel, Representative District 6, Medford. I'd like to read into the record a letter that I've received from, not a letter, but an email that I've received from Doug Stewart, Chief Executive Officer of Mercy Flights Incorporated in Jackson County. We believe that the bill could be written to include all ambulance service providers in the state, but because the federal regulations the bill addresses are very complex, it would take time to figure out how to do it. We don't think it can be done in 6 weeks. We are asking the legislature to postpone the action on this issue until everyone involved, including the Oregon Health Authority, can determine how to make this work fairly and equitably. Mercy Flights is a 501c3 nonprofit air and ground ambulance service that has been serving people in Southern Oregon since 1949. We receive no tax subsidies and have worked diligently to provide private and public ambulance providers to increase the Medicaid reimbursement in Oregon. The Medicaid fee schedule still doesn't cover our costs of providing ambulance transportation to our local citizens. Again, I'm asking you to postpone this legislation until such time we have more input. Sincerely, Doug Stewart, Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate that. I'm going to 4030. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4030. We got some time. We'll go up to the top then. Mm-hmm. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 4015. Madam Administrator, what have we got?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4015, we heard during legislative days as LC-128. This allows a vision care insurer to restrict or limit vision care providers' choice of a supplier for covered services and allows insurers to require the vision care provider to participate in one vision care insurance plan or discount card program. There is a Dash 1 amendment that we received early this morning. However, I think they're going to speak to still some issues around that amendment as well as the bill.
All right.
And we have six people.
Let's please move rapidly. Can we start with a panel favoring the bill?
Dale Penn and Paul Cosgrove.
I think I can safely tell you this bill has a lot of controversy. Firefighters, I really want to thank you for coming down and taking part in our process.
In black line, dude.
Mm-hmm. You felt safe with all those uniforms out there.
They like to do that to us. In force.
Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. Paul Cosgrove, representing the National Association of Vision Care Plans. I just confirmed with your committee assistant that my testimony is on the list, so thank you. Madam Administrator. The National Association of Vision Care Plans includes health insurers who have vision care benefits, and it also includes a number of standalone vision care only insurers. And my testimony deals with three topics. One is the history of this issue. Many of you will remember it, but I wanted to make sure for the record I went over that briefly. This committee passed a bill at the request of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association last session, House Bill 3530, that did a number of things. There were about five or six items requested, and all but one were adopted by this committee or approved by this committee in that bill as it left this body. And that one that was not included was the requested restriction on our ability to select the labs who would be part of our panels. And be reimbursed as panel labs. When it left the Senate, they put that back in and did some other changes, and including in that was clarifying that with respect to non-insurance discount cards for vision care services, they could be provided and honored so long as they were voluntary on behalf of the provider, which we didn't object to by any means. The current status is that many employer and union plans, and these include plans from the Teamsters, from UFCW, and other unions, a lot of large employers, and including the plan that PEB operates, currently have vision care benefits that are, in general, usually provided by a separate company beyond the medical care provider. That's not always true, but in general, that's true. And with respect to those plans, based on the effective date of House Bill 3530, and then to be effective in those plans at the next time those contracts are renewed, those employees will lose a benefit having to do with the agreements that we propose to be added back in this bill that allow an optometrist or an ophthalmologist and its insurance company voluntarily to agree to provide discounts for uncovered items. That's what will be lost by all those people if we don't act this year. The amendment that will be drafted and brought back to you in a few days, I hope, will make it clear that they are voluntary. So I think as we introduced the bill, Representative Hayden had a good question, which was, how do you make this voluntary? And the answer is, it would be two forms of contract with a provider. Do you want it with these discount programs, which some providers we find in other states actually like, because it's a way, especially for new providers, to help build their practice by providing a benefit that consumers like and use. Others may not like, but they either pick contract form A or contract form B. That's one thing that we propose to do in the bill, and we propose to do it because without that, those benefits will be lost to consumers, patients. The second thing is some of these companies have very much like any kind of preferred provider organization or other kind of health care plan that you might be familiar with. The one I always use is Kaiser. It's not directly the same situation, but it's analogous. If you are a Kaiser member and you want to see a doctor, you see a Kaiser doctor. You can see any other doctor you want, but Kaiser won't pay for that. If you want to have your blood work done or your physician and you agree that you should have blood work, you go to a Kaiser lab. Again, I expect, not being a Kaiser member for a number of years, but I expect you can still go to any lab you want, but Kaiser won't pay for it. Some of these vision care plans have relationships with labs, multiple optical labs in some cases, some of which they own, some of which they contract with, some of which are labs that provide for contact lenses and high-grade lenses, others that do the more standard single kind of lens, not continuous vision. What the bill does now is prohibit that kind of an arrangement. And the problem with that is that will have a cost impact because those labs have negotiated contracts based on volumes, and the volumes under the bill that took effect January 1 won't be there if optometrists can choose any lab they want. Now, once again, they can choose whatever lab they and their patient think is appropriate. This is just a limitation on what the insurer is going to pay for. And then the last thing is that the bill does is it. There was a provision in the statute that says we must have signed acknowledgments before any change in reimbursements or terms in the contract can take effect. Well, obviously, if it's actually a change in the contract, you have to have both parties sign it. That's clear. But some of these contracts are written such that the terms and reimbursements are changed because it's X percent of, say, a Medicare fee schedule. And if Medicare changes its fee schedule, that means the reimbursements are changed. And that's not very practical or pragmatic to have a signed acknowledgement every time Medicare changes its reimbursement schedule, which means the amount of the reimbursements changed. The parties in advance agreed they would abide by that kind of a fee schedule, knowing it might change. It doesn't make sense to have signed acknowledgements in advance. What we have proposed in our bill here is to say written advance notice of the change needs to be made, but not signed acknowledgments. So those are the three things that we hope will be in the bill as you see it. I think it maintains many of the provisions the optometrists wanted. I think it helps restore the balance between the two parties. It has some consumer protections in terms of preserving those discounts that consumers want, so long as the provider voluntarily agrees to do so. And it operationally makes more sense and is easier to administer from our perspective and from employers and unions' perspective. So with that, happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Chair Greenlick, Representative Nose, members of the committee. My name is Dale Penn. I'm with CFM here representing Providence Health and Services. Providence is here today both as an insurer and a provider to urge your support for the bill. Everything Paul shared just a few minutes ago, exactly right. We support everything he discussed. We believe this legislation goes a good distance towards restoring the important contracting relationship between insurers and providers, with the ultimate goal of improving the experience for the consumer. A fair and balanced contracting process, one without the restrictions put in place by the 2015 law, will ensure customers receive high-quality care, high-quality services at the best possible prices. And Providence is fully committed to the triple aim goal of bending the healthcare costs down. And in order to do this, insurers, consumers, providers need to come together and identify methods for savings. And one such method is the discounts that Paul just discussed earlier, resulting from economies of scale where a provider is able to negotiate with material suppliers or optical labs or even within their own system if they're vertically integrated to bring the cost curve down for the consumer. So we submitted also a letter from Dave Underreiner, from CEO of Providence, that should be on OLIS up in your files, and we urge your support for the bill, and we're here to take any questions.
May I just make one quick comment?
Very quick.
This bill addresses three issues. There were about seven or eight in the original bill. We are not proposing to go back to what the situation before passage of last bill. We're talking about addressing three of the problems we see in last session's bill.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We have some folks in opposition. I think that's what's on their mind. Representative Hoyle, would you like to join us?
Mr. Chair.
Come on.
May I join Representative Hoyle?
You may. But be brief. We've got a ton of work to do, and we can...
I will be brief.
If this comes back for a work session, we'll have lots of time to talk about it.
Great.
Representative Hoyle.
Oh, me first?
He's a member of the committee.
Val Hoyle, State Representative for House District 14, West Eugene, and Junction City. And thank you very much for calling me up. I just would like to say briefly, I originally supported the bill, was it 30? I'm trying to remember what it was. 3530, which passed by 59 votes unanimously in the House, unanimously in the Senate, because Rainbow Optics, which is in my district and employs 16 people in my district, came to me and said, this is a problem because they're optometrists that also make glasses. Now, if I have an insurance policy that says I get $70 for frames and $120 for lenses, how I spend that, I believe, is my choice. And the way I choose to spend it is in a way that creates jobs in my district. So I supported 3530. This bill just went into effect. I do think that we need to give it time to see how it works. But for me, this is not only about getting services right away. Right after 3530 had been passed off the floor, my office manager in my office had to go get glasses. She was having terrible migraines, and she wasn't able to get her glasses right away because her insurance told her she had to get the glasses sent from Florida. They expedited sending her glasses, the wrong pair, and she had to go 2.5 weeks without getting the glasses she needed, and her job it requires her to look at a computer. So if I go to Rainbow Optics, if I go to my local optometrist, they can get me glasses right away. I can choose. I can have choice. I can shop there. But again, I can see that maybe there are some incentives one can give for purchasing glasses in a certain area. But if I have a benefit with an insurance plan, I should be able to spend that benefit in a way that does the greatest good. And for me, that's getting the kind of service I get from my local retailer and also creating jobs in my district. So the bottom line is I am here to speak in opposition of this LC. I know that I just heard Mr. Cosgrove say that there were some amendments to address concerns of the optometrist. I haven't seen them. Neither have the optometrists, so I'm not sure if he spoke with them before he put those forward. But just to be clear, I would ask you to give this policy a chance to take effect. Let's see what the effect is, and if it needs to be addressed, maybe that can be done in the long session.
Senator Widener.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. State Representative Jim Widener, House District 24. I, too, am here in opposition to the bill. Worked with Representative Hoyle on this and with many members. It's an issue that I became very familiar with because I kind of walked into the optical industry at one point with a couple of business partners in opening an optical lab. And the very first thing is when I started going out to doctors, I started hearing all these different complaints about how our insurance worked. Well, being a member here, I went and used my benefit for my eyes and found out that I actually needed glasses at that point when I was still maintaining that I was young and didn't need glasses. And I just saw what the benefit actually was and got into seeing what the costs were. And I started investigating more, and Representative Hoyle was exactly right on what she was saying. But I'm almost wondering if we're not dealing with a bigger issue here as I've looked into this deeper, because an insurance company can't own a drug manufacturing facility. And as you saw in the testimony before, they were talking about the insurance companies or benefit providers owning their own labs or making their own prescriptions, which is a violation of Stark's law. And I wonder if we shouldn't really have a legal opinion on this, because truly is what you're doing is creating a prescription every time you grind a lens, which then would be a violation of Stark's law if they are truly making a prescription for a patient. So because they cannot manufacture a drug or a prescription then under Stark's law.
Can we hold that for another day?
So well, we can hold. Well, I would think we really should get a legal opinion on this. I think it's fair for us to go to LC and ask for a legal opinion on this, because this is what is happening in the industry. So, and then they give artificial values to these numbers too. So I know members up here who wear glasses and have probably paid $500 out of pocket just to get a pair of glasses, and you have insurance. How does that make sense when I'm still having to pay all of this money out of pocket to pay for this when I have a benefit that I'm already provided from by my employer and I'm supposed to have a certain amount with it? So I see this time and time again. I see where patients come in with the benefit and they're paying a lot of money out of pocket if they need to get AR coatings and things like that on their glasses, and they shouldn't be having to do it. Those should be things that are already done. Every doctor will recommend that you have your lenses made this specific way, but the problem is they'll come in with this one low price and then they just nickel and dime a patient and to get them in the actual lens that they need to. And you're going to hear testimony from doctors, I'm sure, after we remove ourselves from the dais who are living in the world.
I hope I have very brief testimony.
Anyhow, but I sincerely think we should get a legal opinion on this. So with that, I'm finished, Chair Greenlee.
Those counsels work for you as well as anybody else here.
Yes.
Thank
you very much.
Really appreciate it.
We have another panel coming up again. I'm going to ask you to be brief. If we move to a work session, we'll have more time to address the issue. So.
Ashley McFerrin, Pam, I'm sorry I can't read. Okay. Bill Cross, and then Nanheim is on deck.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we're pleased to be here today. My name is Bill Cross. I work with the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. I will defer to our two optometric physicians to make a few comments about our concerns.
Thank you very much.
Chair Greenlee.
That's a perfect testimony. If we can model that, it would work very well. Yes, go ahead.
Chair Greenlee, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Ashley McFerrin. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego, but have a practice, own a practice in Cambie, and I employ 10 Oregonians. I'm also the president-elect of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. First, I want to thank you for your support in passing House Bill 3530 last year. The passage protected Oregonians who are patients, local small business owners, and employees. Effective January 1 of this year, this new law made abusive practices by these out-of-state companies illegal. House Bill 4015 attempts to unravel these after being in effect for only 1 month. There are three main components to the bill. First, House Bill 4015 forces participation in one vision plan in order to participate in another plan. This would once again allow insurers to force providers contracting for one specific plan to accept additional plans that may not make sense for our practice or our patients. Secondly, House Bill 4015 forces use of specific optical labs and materials. It would force providers to send spectacle jobs to out-of-state optical labs that are, in fact, many cases owned by the insurance company themselves. It would also allow vision plans to require use of their own lenses and products, which may not be the best choice for the patient. This reduces our ability to provide the level of service and quality of product that our patients need and deserve. Additionally, it limits the choice not only for the provider, but for the patient. One example is if a patient's been in one design progressive lens, the no-line bifocal that a lot of people wear, and they've been successful wearing it, it's generally a good idea a lot of times to keep them in that same designed lens. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of different design lenses on the market. When we're forced to use the insurance-owned products, the design of the lenses are different, and patients many times are not successful in wearing new lenses. Therefore, if the patient chooses to keep their current lens design, they lose their insurance benefit. Although I don't have my own lens laboratory in my office, I do choose to work with a lab in Portland, and due to the quality that they provide, the speed at which I can get jobs back to dispense to my patients, and the customer service. House Bill 4015 would allow national vision plan companies to force me to send work to out of state. As you know, this jeopardizes Oregon jobs and local economies. To review the third component of the bill, I'll turn over to my fellow optometrist colleague, Pam DeColesta. Following directions here. Chair Greenlee, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Pam DeColesta. My husband and I are both optometric physicians, and we own a three-office practice in Eugene that employs 65 fellow Oregonians. I'm also currently the secretary-treasurer of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. As prefaced by Dr. McFerrin, the third part of this bill includes voluntary discount programs. Before the passage of HB 3530B, doctors were forced by vision plans to give discounts on products for which the insurer did not provide reimbursement. HB 4015 pretends to make accepting discounts voluntary. However, the voluntary option still puts doctors in a corner when choosing between accepting non-reimbursed discounts or potentially losing patients. In other states, vision plans are using tactics such as required acceptance of voluntary discounts in order to be placed on a preferred provider list. Additionally, vision plans have been sending letters to patients specifically listing the providers that decided not to volunteer. This option really only provides a false choice. Our Eugene practice has been in business since 1977. We do have our own in-office spectacle lab, allowing us to provide faster service, guarantee the quality, and maintain lab-specific jobs for five of our employees.
A recent review of our records shows that in 2004, about 30% of the spectacle jobs covered by one of our major insurance carriers were required to be processed out of house or not in our own lab. In 2014, that number was almost 70%, which is more than double. This is impacting more and more of our patients and our employees, and ultimately our local Oregon business every year. In closing, HB 3530 was critical in leveling the playing field and addressing the many abuses that doctors and patients were experiencing. HB 4015 would repeal these hard-fought advances in patient access, protections, and choice. Oregon jobs will be affected and small businesses will suffer. Unfair business practices by large national for-profit vision plans will be allowed to diminish the ability of Oregon optometric physicians to provide the optimal care for their patients and communities all across Oregon. I respectfully ask you to oppose HB 4015. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony, and we're available to answer any additional questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I think we have one more witness.
But stay close. You might be included here.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick. I've got a question, and I don't know the answer to it, and I know I shouldn't ask questions without knowing the answer. But why isn't there a third option from the vision insurer to the physician to pay them a set fee that puts the onus on the physician to contract with the lab to get the glasses, and then the physician's office pays for those glasses? This is done in other medical fields, and it seems like that might solve the problem.
And some plans are that way, but a lot are not. Most are not.
Yes, Chair Greenlake and members of the committee, that is how things were mostly in the past, and it has gradually evolved into the changes that we're trying to not continue to allow to happen, where the insurance carrier owns everything or almost everything, and we're forced pretty much to use what they have in order to accept their plans and to provide what our patients need. So that is available in some cases, but it is gradually moving away from that, and that's where we're having the issues.
Good. Thank you.
Nan, please, briefly.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Hayden, Vice Chair Nose, my name is Nan Heim. I represent the Oregon Academy of Ophthalmology. They are medical eye physicians and surgeons throughout the state, and they want to join with their optometric colleagues in strongly opposing House Bill 4015. The response to my inquiry was very, very strong. It has to do mainly, as I understood, with the quality of materials that they want for optimum patient care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4015 and open the public hearing on which one? On 4071, and ask Representative Rayfield to join us.
And it's Jeremy.
Can you please tell us what we have here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HB 4071 establishes a compact of free association premium assistance program administered by the Department of Consumer and Business Services to provide financial assistance.
Wait a minute, we haven't called any panel. If you please wait for us.
And they didn't sign up. I only have three people signing up.
We only have three people on the panel signing up, and that's what we're going with. Representative Rayfield, do you want to kick us off?
I will. I was just going to be very brief. So my name is Dan Rayfield, State Representative from the Corvallis, Philomath area. I'm also here on behalf of Representative Andy Olson from the Albany area, who could not be here today. This is a bill that Representative Olson has been working on for a long time. I think a lot of you are probably very familiar with this bill, so I won't belabor it. This bill will provide health care benefits for around 1,000 to 1,500 members, and it is, and the most important part, it will have a 9-to-1 federal match on this, which is the, probably the critical part. But instead of me going through how important this bill and the impact that it will have on the members of this community, what I would love to do is actually invite them up here to the table to speak on it personally.
I prefer not to invite them up if it's all right with you.
And you are the chair.
So. And I think we plan on moving it to Ways and Means, so I don't think we need to have a lot of...
That works for me. That puts a smile on my face.
I think it's better to move to Ways and Means than have a discussion.
So. Yeah, yes. You got 5 votes, you want to go for 4?
I know Vice Chair Nose is a difficult person to deal with, so whatever helps get him on board.
Right. The rest your case.
We have two other people that have signed up, unless you're both of them.
Just a quick point of clarification. Can you just explain how the 9-to-1 multiplier works? Where does that come from?
My understanding is that is a 9-to-1 match on the federal side. So that is coming from federal dollars into the state for each dollar that we put into this. I'm not sure the specifics on the dynamics of how that is working. So.
Perhaps Barry Leslie can explain it to us.
I'm going to call Jeremy at the same time.
And Jeremy, you want to join us as well? Can you answer the 9-to-1 question for us?
Good afternoon. My name is Barry Leslie, and I'm the administrator for the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace. Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, how it works is that this is essentially trying to make someone who's currently ineligible for Medicaid to receive what the same benefits as a Medicaid program, which is up to 133% of the poverty level. So when they would apply for a plan on healthcare.gov, they would apply for the second lowest silver plan. And so they would be eligible for a certain amount of tax credits, which would be the federal contribution, which is where that 90% comes in. And the state would then be responsible for that other 10%.
And DCBS, why don't you give your testimony?
You know, I didn't prepare testimony because I understood that the chair was trying to keep this really brief.
Yeah.
But what I can share with you is that we've been working with the COFA advocates and turned in a substantive report back in November, and it addressed a lot of these different questions and ways that we would implement this program. And we feel really confident that we'd be able to implement a program that would bring in a lot of federal dollars and keep it in this $1 to $1.8 million fiscal impact range that we had talked about.
Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Green. Look, I have a question on the coverage of the copays or the out-of-pocket cost. Under the literature that I was giving, it appears that there's no sidebars or limitations on that, so the state would potentially be on, if this plan went forward, be required or obligated to pay for unlimited surgeries, except with the exception of dental for like cosmetic limb lengthening surgery or something like that.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Hayden, this actually has a $750 per person out-of-pocket maximum, so the state would be responsible for the premium cost that was not paid by the federal government through the advanced premium tax credit, and then the out-of-pocket costs, which actually do have a maximum. So we don't have any information about costs outside of, or state responsibility for costs outside of the in-network out-of-pocket costs and the premium.
So if it was a non-covered service by the insurance, it would not be covered?
That is correct.
Is that what you're saying? Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Vandehey?
Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Vandehey, healthcare policy advisor for Governor Kate Brown. Happy to be here today to offer the governor's support for House Bill 4071. I think I'll be wise and keep my testimony brief, but want to state our support for the governor's support for the bill. And she really believes this will fix an inequity right now for about 1,500 people who are currently categorically ineligible for Medicaid. So urge your support. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yes,
Mr. Chair, not a question. I just worked with the work group on a number of meetings, and I just wanted to say there's a lot of great staff work. It meets part of a very important need, and I think it ought to pass.
Okay, Garner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got to hear a lot about this bill in this committee last year, but also in the Human Services Subcommittee, where we got into more details around the financing. And then I have followed the reports as you came out with them, a lot of really great work on that. This is a very unfortunate circumstance in which the federal government has categorically denied people who are here legally, working here legally, from these benefits. And I think it's fantastic that we're taking this step. I heartily support it.
Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4071 and open up a work session on House Bill 4071.
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chair?
I would.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that House Bill 4071 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation, but that the bill be referred to the WIC Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Nose moves that we move House Bill 4071 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior
reference. Told that's the way to say it.
You said it perfectly. All right. I had trouble. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Clem.
President Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in case I'm not around when this bill comes out to the floor that day, I'm in a committee. I want to thank the folks who worked on, we had an earlier version of trying to get at this. It was really expensive. We couldn't figure it out. And a lot of folks from the agencies and the community stayed engaged. And as Representative Kenny Geyer said, it is an unfortunate circumstance that people who pay taxes can't access their own programs. But what was really an unfortunate circumstance is that we nuked their home. And for 10,000 years, no one can go there. So I would like to see at least some measure of reparation through a little tiny state subsidy for their premiums while they're here in their new adopted home, Oregonians that they are.
Yeah. Okay. Can you call the roll, please?
Representative Buehler?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Lyman?
Hi.
Representative Widener?
Excuse. I don't see him.
You don't? Yes. Excuse.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose?
Aye.
And Chair Greenwood?
Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session on House Bill 4071.
Wait, here he is. Maybe he wants to vote.
Aye. it works that way. Got to suspend the rules now.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules to allow
Representative Widener to vote. Is there any objection? So moved. How do you vote?
Aye.
Close the work session on House Bill 4071.
Sorry, I blanked in your name.
Permanently this time. And open up a...
Go back to public hearing.
Yeah.
Unless you want to do my easy bill.
Yeah, let's do the easy bill first. That's right. If you guys promise to keep it quick.
Promise to be quick.
Open up a public hearing on House Bill 4104. Yes, ma'am. What do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4104 defines, adds a new definition of limited benefit coverage, excludes health insurance offering limited benefit coverage from certain statutory requirements for health insurance coverage. We do have a fiscal and a revenue. There's no fiscal impact and no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And no amendments.
Very briefly.
Timing. Committee, thank you for your time. For the record, my name is Rob Nose. I'm the state representative for House District 42, which is in southeast and northeast Portland. We're all aware that since the passage of the Affordable Health Care Act, this committee has considered numerous bills related to health insurance. House Bill 4104 was written to help us as legislators do a better job when we craft legislation around that subject. I'm sure all of you are aware there are different types of health insurance plans that vary in cost and quality and what they cover. Not all these different types of insurance are designed to function in the same way. Typically, when legislation is passed, I'm told, relating to health insurance, it's done with a comprehensive medical insurance plan in mind. House Bill 4104 creates a new statutory category definition for insurance plans that are designed to cover specific injuries and illnesses, which we're going to call limited benefit coverage. Limited benefit coverage, should it pass, will typically refer to things like disability insurance, which pays directly to the insured as opposed to the medical provider, or a secondary insurance plan for things like cancer, dental, or vision coverage. Creating definitions such as this will help to clarify the intent of future legislation. I think it's a pretty simple bill, and I would encourage you to pass it.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Greenleaf, members of the committee, I'll be brief. Scott Berry here today with Aflac, and Gary Allen also in from Columbus, Georgia, on behalf of Aflac. And again, I'll be very brief. I think this bill is simply defining what our policies are. It used to be that with health insurance stated in the bill, we were in. With health benefit plan, we were out. Some issues came up the last few sessions, specifically with relation to the ambulance folks not being able to list health benefit plan because that excluded Medicare supplemental, which they needed in the bill. Therefore, we were not able to get out of that bill and ended up having to pay some of the ambulance providers in addition to our policyholders. This simply sets up a definition of our policies and allows us to be either included or excluded based on adding that simple definition.
Yourself. Chairman Greenleaf and the committee, my name is Gary Allen. I'm the vice president with Aflac, and I helped Scott write his very brief speech for you.
That's exactly the right answer.
Good work.
Are there any questions to this panel? Thank you all very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4104 and open work session on House Bill 4104. Representative Hayden.
Chair Greenleaf, I move that House Bill 4104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hayden moves House Bill 4104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kenmer?
Aye.
Representative Kniegeier?
Oops. Excuse.
My God.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose?
Oh, I guess yes.
And Chair Greenleaf?
Hard enough.
Aye. Stand and rest for a moment. Stand at ease for a moment.
Who's the carrier?
Oh, a carrier. Representative Notes.
I'm going to carry it, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
And we're going to read all three pages. Yeah.
The work session on House Bill 4104 and open a public hearing.
Oh,
you guys enjoy this.
You want to vote on that bill?
Aye.
Mr. Chair,
open the work session one more time on House Bill 4104.
Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules and allow Representative Kniegeier to vote on House Bill 4014.
Representative Widener moves we suspend the rules and allow Representative Kniegeier to vote on House Bill 4104. Any objection? Hearing none, so moved. How do you vote?
Thank you, Representative Widener. Mr. Chair, I vote aye.
Close the work session on House Bill 4104. All right. Is it dead? Yes, we killed it.
We can open it.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 4016. Madam Administrator, what have we got?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with House Bill 4016, you will recall we had a briefing on it during legislative days. It was LC-129. The bill... The original LC permits the Oregon Board of Dentistry, Medical Board, State Board of Nursing, and the Board of Pharmacy to contract to establish impaired health professional programs for their licensees of the appropriate board. Requires the program to meet requirements for the impaired health professional program contracted for or established by the Oregon Health Authority. Declares an emergency effective on passage We have a dash one amendment, Mr. Chair, and basically the amendment is allowing, taking the Oregon Health Authority out, completely allowing any and all of the healthcare professional boards to contract with the impaired. Rather than just the four, Mr. Chair. We have a no revenue on the dash one. We have not received a fiscal impact on the dash one, Mr. Chair. And we have.
We lost the
one, two, three, four, five folks, Mr. Chair.
All right, who we got?
Kathleen Haley, Christopher Hamilton, Perla Estrada.
Let's start with that.
Yeah, those were the three that signed up.
I only see two.
Oh, Christopher, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure who Perla is. You want me to just go to the next one, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Tom Delzell.
Sure.
Want to come up?
Kathleen, go for it.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Oregon Medical Board. The Oregon Health Professional Services Program is a monitoring program for those licensees of health boards who suffer from a mental health disorder or a substance abuse disorder or comorbid disorder. The four boards mentioned in this original bill are the ones that are participating in that in this program right now. The health authority since 2009 has been providing the administrative services for that program. While the boards have funneled the patients, that is the licensees, into it, the health authority has provided those administrative services. This bill proposes to have the participating boards provide those administrative services. The costs have been increasing to us, and we are stewards of our licensees' dollars. We would like to take that $300,000 we save over the biennium and use them for other purposes. So with this, we strongly urge you to support the bill. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Let's get the panel first.
Chair Greenlick and co-vice chairs Nose and Hayden, my name is Dr. Christopher Hamilton, not the kind of doctor that can actually help you, but just a PhD. But I am the director of monitoring programs at Reliant Behavioral Health. We have operated the health professional services program since its inception in July 2010, ever since the consolidation of the programs that were previously run by the dental, pharmacy, medical, and nursing boards. I'm not here to speak in support or opposition, but just wanted to provide some of the amazing outcomes that we've had through the program. To date, we've had a 65% completion rate of licensees who enrolled before July 2011. 74% of all licensees are on target to complete the program. If we look at just the Oregon Medical Board licensees, we're at 84% about to complete the program. Looking back for a recidivism measure, only 4.8%, 10 of the 219 licensees who completed before June 2014 have had subsequent board orders on their licenses. The program's working. The program is working from the tireless work that has come from board staff, Oregon Health Authority staff, and we as a vendor coming together in regular meetings. We continue to meet quarterly to make program improvements. Program improvements that have occurred over the last year include reducing the cost of toxicology for those who are under or unemployed. Although I'm not in support or opposition, I do ask the committee to reflect on the legislative intent back in 2009 in creating the Health Professional Services Program, and to consider that over the last 5.5 years, there has been no more news coverage or media coverage of these programs or the licensees. And with that, I'm here and available for any questions you may have.
Dr. Hamilton, I asked Dr. Hamilton particularly in a phone conversation last week to consider the issue of the role OHA has played in a buffer between the boards and the program. And do you think there's any possibility that that might turn into a problem? And I'll ask you all to consider it.
I will say I can foresee a problem. The boards work very well with us as the vendor, as well as with the Oregon Health Authority. But it makes me wonder, as a political scientist to me, triangulates a separation of powers, if you will, in terms of that balance between the Oregon Health Authority, the boards, and the vendor.
When we're done, I'll ask You all consider that issue. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Chair Greenland, Vice Chairs Nose and Hayden. For the record, my name is Tom Delzell. I represent Juniper Behavioral Consulting. I'm a private practice therapist that provides monitoring services for healthcare professionals in Bend, Oregon. When I first moved to Bend 3.5 years ago, there were no therapists providing monitoring services in Central Oregon. I opened up a practice. I've been a treatment specialist in the area of assisting and supporting healthcare professionals in recovery for many years now. And I do support this bill as a good first step in the short session as a way to look at the review process and let the four boards operate the healthcare professionals program as it did before when I first became a treatment specialist. At that time, the system seemed to work very well, and I'm concerned about the revenue expenditures sort of doubling up or middlemaning, if you will, with the Oregon Health Authority. Again, I'm on the ground working with healthcare professionals in recovery. I support the program, the HPSP, as it is. It appears to be improving every year. I also want to commend my colleagues at RBH and the boards. We are improving the system, which is a very important system for patient safety in the state of Oregon, but also to give these healthcare professionals a chance to recover from a medical condition and renew their practices. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Open the floor. Yes, go ahead.
Just a quick question.
No, I'm sorry.
No, we just have one more presenter as well.
Oh, should we have one more? Yeah, all right, let's bring up the last presenter. But Kathleen, will you hang in?
Jim Conway, please.
Dr. Hamilton, don't go anywhere quite yet.
Representative Greenlick, co-chairs, and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present today. My name is James Conway. I'm a licensed marriage family therapist in Oregon and California. I have worked with health professionals since 1991, and today I represent the Oregon Health Professionals Program, a private corporation in Oregon. I strongly support this bill as a very good first step in reorganizing the program, the existing program, to be more effective, more accessible to participants, and to improve the successful completion rates. My hope is in the long session, the committee will look closely at every aspect of the laws. I have been involved in state physician and health professional programs, again, since 1991. Most of my experience in California and now here in Oregon, but with all kinds of programs, especially in the western states. And I would like to see Oregon have a really first-class program, and I think this bill moves us toward that. Thank you.
For the record, the model we've implemented, and we worked very hard on it over several years, was impaired professionals can seek treatment wherever treatment is available. The function of this program is to be monitoring performance, to be an intermediary between the treatment providers and the boards themselves, and that's worked very well. But Kathleen, if you address my question, I wonder what kind of safeguards we can put in place that'll make sure the board says, well, if you don't give me this information, we're not going to renew your contract, with information that Dr. Hamilton and his people may feel inappropriate for the board to have. How do we protect that?
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I believe that we all share the same mission, and that is patient safety. We have no history of trying to pressure any program to turn over confidential information. We have no intention of doing that going forward. In our minds, and I think I can speak for the other boards, what we're really interested is saving on the administrative costs. We are not interested in changing the content of the program. We want it to continue. It has been successful, and that's our interest. We want to see our health care practitioners get healthy.
Representative Norris?
I was just curious, what was the discussion with your board about when you decided to go for this idea or approach?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Nose, it was in support of it. We have a legislative committee that vets these issues, and then they also go to the full board. They were in support.
Okay, so the full board and the legislative committee like the idea?
Both, yes.
Okay.
There are other questions to these witnesses? Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all very much. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4016.
And reopen.
We skipped a witness on House Bill 4030 who would very much like to put some things on the record, so I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 4030 and invite who have we?
Dave Tully.
Dave Tully, will you join us? Anybody else? It's open, back open again, and we have a few minutes. Amazingly. Wow. Please go for it.
Thank you. Representative Chair. Also, Vice Chair Mr. Nose and Mr. Hayden, and all committee members. My name is Dave Tully. I'm with Teamsters Local 223. I'm out speaking today in regards to opposition to House Bill 4030. Currently, we represent 450 paramedics and EMTs in Multnomah County and Clackamas County. We're opposed to the bill in its current form. We feel currently the counties have an RFP bid process that is fair and level. And this monies that are coming out of this bill do not level the playing field at all for our private ambulance agency that we currently represent. Therefore, we are asking that you not forward this bill in its current form. That's it. Thank you.
What form would you like it in?
We are drafting an amendment. We will start drafting an amendment today to this bill. We would like it open to our private ambulance agencies and also the voluntary agencies out there.
Good. Is there any questions for this? Yes, Representative Kinnaman.
I guess mine's probably more in terms of a comment. I think one of the things I've appreciated is this committee has been working on health care is to endeavor to raise all votes. And I think that's the flaw that's in this bill. It's not
it
doing
some
that.
Boats out, huh?
What?
It leaves some boats out.
I think it leaves a lot of boats sinking, actually. That's why I think we need to take a little deeper look.
I think that's the concern. The concern is if you raise the reimbursement for a subset of the programs, it will disadvantage the programs from that.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
That's the fear.
I could make a comment. I got looking at the federal dollars and stuff on that, too. What happens if that federal program gets cut off just because of budgetary constraints? Then all of a sudden, we kind of artificially threw some money in. And the best idea I heard was the CCOs actually administering. So the funds come in, distributed to the CCOs, and then they just contract with their local provider, whether it's a public or private entity or whoever they choose to. That made the most sense.
The limitation is the federal program is only for public agencies. So it has to be some relationship between the public entities and the
and so the county would be probably appropriate.
Yeah.
For that.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 4030. We're 15 minutes early. I don't know what to make of that. I over.
You'll use that later, though.
Over.
That's right. We can use it later. Good. We'll put it in the bank.
We don't get it again.
I move that it not be allowed to move forward.
We are adjourned. Good job. Good job.